KALW.
Many Black folks do not want to eat chicken and watermelon in mixed company. So here now we have a situation where Black folks have to monitor and police what they eat and where they eat it.
Why do some people feel shame about the foods they eat?
The history of Black culture will always be ridiculed, picked apart, laughed at because it's just something that isn't understood because we weren't allowed to live our life.
Today, we explore the foods that are used to stereotype Black people, and we unpack the history behind some of this food shaming.
It's through growing of watermelon and selling it. This is one of the reasons our farms were taken from us, right? Through the USDA being denied loans.
Watermelon, a story from the Stoop podcast. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're going to hear a new episode from The Stoop, the podcast that explores Black diaspora life, hosted by me and Leela Day. Food has been historically used as a tool of discrimination against Black communities, whether it's in minstrel shows or commercials or cartoons with images of characters in blackface eating watermelon or fried chicken. In this episode, we'll unpack the history of this food shaming, and we'll hear how people are trying to fight it head-on today.
Ladies and gentlemen, very shortly we'll be ready for departure, so all your mobile phones and electronic devices should be switched off. Please make sure your seatbelt is now fastened, and do make yourself comfortable. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please fasten your seatbelts. We are ready for takeoff.
Hannah, I'm remembering something that recently happened.
Welcome to Flight 203 with service to San Francisco. We hope you enjoy your flight.
Okay, I've been running around all morning trying to catch this flight. I was hungry, I was thirsty, the flight was packed.
Hi ma'am, would you like some water, pretzels, snacks?
I just couldn't stop thinking about taking a sip of something cold and refreshing. My tongue was dry, my body dehydrated.
I know the feeling on those flights. It is a dry, dry situation.
Oh, yes. And so when the flight attendant arrived, she asked,
Hi, ma'am, would you like some water?
Yes, I said.
Still or sparkling?
Sparkling, please.
Regular
or watermelon?
Why did she say that so loud? Why in front of all these people? Why does she have everyone looking at me? I can see them all looking, waiting, smirking, knowing what I'm going to order. There aren't that many Black people on this flight. They know what they're doing.
Ma'am, regular or watermelon? Which one would you like?
I'll have the regular.
Okay, Leela, but you wanted the watermelon, didn't you?
Yes, I did want the watermelon.
So why didn't you order it?
We need to stoop this out.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
The Stoop.
Stories from across the Black diaspora
that we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a Black woman walks up to the desk in labor, what preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
Hey, Leela.
Hey, Hannah.
We are back. It is season 8 of The Stoop, and we are excited to be back.
I know, I know. And today we're talking about the stereotypes around the foods we eat, because it's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. It is real. There's been writing about it, talks about it. It's something that has been studied, and we are about to talk about it today.
Yeah, like, do any of us feel shame around the things we eat? And why?
I grew up hearing about that stereotype of Black people, they love fried chicken and watermelon. That seemed to be the only food that we ever eat is fried chicken and watermelon.
Listen, the history of Black culture will always be ridiculed, picked apart, laughed at because it's just something that isn't understood because we weren't allowed to live our life. I don't like watermelon, so I won't be eating it. But if it's fried chicken in front of me, I'm going to tear it up.
Are anyone afraid to eat watermelon and chicken in front of white people or black? Hell to the no. I'm going to eat chicken, watermelon, pineapple, papaya, mangoes, and everything, and lick the fingers too.
I'm a chef, but we used to make jokes about it. Like, why they got to put the black person on the fried chicken?
Yeah, I have no fear of eating watermelon and fried chicken in front of other races and stuff like that. No, not at all.
Well, I have a really good girlfriend who did not start eating watermelon to maybe 4 or 5 years ago because of the stereotype of, like, black people eating watermelon. But who doesn't love fried chicken and watermelon? It was made fun of to ridicule us, but the people that were ridiculing us like it too. And I would laugh at her until finally I was like, girl, just eat this. And she was like, oh my God, I didn't know it was so good. And I'm like, you've been denying yourself years of watermelon.
This feeling of shame goes way back to these stereotypes around black people eating watermelon.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will conclude this part of the entertainment with a brand new song sung here in Chicago for the first time on any stage by myself and company.
And it's not just watermelon. Things like fried chicken also are tied to the same type of feeling for some people, this shame.
Food shaming occurs, I think, in a number of different ways.
Hana, this is Dr. Psyche Williams-Forson, professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, College Park.
And I study and write about the lives of African-American people and Black people throughout the diaspora. And specifically, I study people's cultural life ways and the ways in which they engage with their material worlds, specifically around food and culture.
Dr. Psyche has written a book about food shaming called Eating While Black, Food Shaming and Race in America. Aha, so Dr. Psyche might give us some context about why some people have this shame around eating things like watermelon.
Mm-hmm. Many Black folks do not want to eat chicken and watermelon in mixed company. So here now we have a situation where Black folks have to monitor and police what they eat and where they eat it because of the ignorance of people around them. I know lots of Black folks who are like, oh, no, I am not eating a watermelon in public. And I'm certainly not eating it if it's not cut up into small pieces. Right? We're talking about a fruit. But the legacy of that fruit is so endemic to our society. We saw this when President Obama was elected the first year. Right? The first time he was elected. A postcard circulated on social media that showed a picture of the White House and the South Lawn covered with watermelon. In fact, the title of my book, Eating While Black, actually comes from an article that was written by Damon Young back when he was with The Root, right? And he had a picture of President Obama eating, or there was a caption where he was eating a piece of chicken. And Damon Young says, you know, once again, here we are just living while Black, eating while Black. And I said, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Going about our daily lives, eating food. But because we are not that far removed from those historical underpinnings, those racist historical underpinnings, we cannot escape. Right? We cannot escape. I know folks who won't eat chicken in public. One woman says, eating chicken at your desk at work is ghetto. Why? Everybody else eats chicken at work. Why is it ghetto for Black people?
Okay, so Lila, let's talk about the roots of the watermelon, mm-hmm. where this fruit came from. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's from Africa. Researchers have traced it back to a region in Sudan. And that region is called Kordofan. It's in the west of Sudan. It's actually where my mama's family originally came from. Hey! And watermelons have even been seen in ancient hieroglyphics in Egypt, as far back as before 3000 BC. Yeah, I mean, free Black people grew watermelon. They sold it. It was a huge source of income for the Black community.
It was a tool of self-sufficiency until that self-sufficiency became a problem. It's through growing of watermelon and harvesting watermelon, selling it. This is one of the reasons our farms were taken from us, right? Through the USDA being denied loans, anything that would allow us to be self-sufficient. You know, when we were not given that 40 acres and a mule, now we're going to take everything from you.
So then the image of the watermelon was used to humiliate Black people.
So the watermelon came through the transatlantic slave trade, and free Black people enjoyed it. You know, why not? It's good.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were these racist tropes, these caricatures of Black people, and watermelon became a central image of the Black minstrel.
These minstrel shows were basically used to normalize racism. But the watermelon was actually a symbol of freedom for Black people, right?
We start to see Black children and adults in these compromising positions, if you will, with the watermelon, big lips, shiny face, smile. And so, you know, it's because of technology and popular culture that these images began to circulate in the same ways that they did with chicken. That same image that is sparked from the watermelon then became a trope for the chicken, because you had a restaurant, for example, called the Coon Chicken Inn. And the emblem for the Coon Chicken Inn was that Sambo face, right? Well, chicken did the same thing that watermelon did, both during enslavement and well after. For centuries, Black folks, Africans first and then African Americans over time, used chicken to, in some, when they were allowed in particular, to find their ways towards self-sufficiency, either to furnish their homes, to buy their freedom, to do a variety of different things.
It was the late 1800s, and these images of Black people in racist cartoons, the blackface, you know, it ran rampant.
Yeah, and in 1916, there was this song that was released. It has a very familiar tune.
It's a tune that's still heard today in the ice cream trucks.
For many people, chasing after the ice cream truck after hearing its now famous jingle is a summer ritual. But would you believe that the song actually has some racist origins?
I must say, I have no problem eating watermelon henna in front of people. No problem eating fried chicken, for the record, okay?
Okay.
It was just that one moment in a very white space.
Mm-hmm.
I was feeling trapped on a plane, you know? I had this knee-jerk reaction that, you know, this is a setup, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when you're telling the story, it sounds a lot like it was very much related to the space you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of depends on where you are, who you're with. Like, so maybe if I was sitting next to you on that plane, would you have felt the same way, do you think?
I don't think so. I probably would have ordered two. Give me two watermelon spritzers, please.
Or maybe, like you said, it was just your mood that day, stuff you were thinking about, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, the mood, the space, that all factors in. I had a very rough week with work, and I was questioning a lot of things about systems, about how things are set up. And then came the question, and then the looks.
What would you like, regular or watermelon?
I think when we clamp down on each other's joy by shaming, That's when we have fallen into and bought into the narrative of Black deficiency. That's when we bought into the narrative of Black inability. And that's when we've fallen into the narrative of Black without freedom and liberation. I think seeing Black people have joy that is disruptive to the national order.
So the watermelon was basically used as a weapon against Black people. But that was then. Things are different now.
Go, 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 go!
Welcome to the 21st century, where a watermelon eating contest is happening at a farmer's market in Oakland, California.
We wanted to diminish the shame. We wanted to bring back the celebration. And we also wanted to make sure that, because our farmers sell watermelons, we want people to be eating watermelon.
Lila, this is Dr. Gail Myers. She's an anthropologist, and she studies Black farmers, food, and land. She started this organization called Farm to Grow. And every Saturday for the past 9 years, they've been here at this farmer's market.
You know, it's a healthy food.
People have their hands behind their backs. Everyone has a watermelon slice in front of them, and they're bending down. They're eating that juicy watermelon.
You know, watermelon is an incredible food. It's hot. You need something that's hydrating, right? And so it's nature's natural hydration. We wanted to make sure that we weren't ashamed about eating watermelon in public. Come on out. We're going to have a contest. Let's see how fast you can eat your watermelon in public. And we celebrate that. We celebrate the winner.
And Lila, another part of this, like Dr. Gail said, is that these foods that have been stereotyped, they're all Black-grown foods, mm-hmm. right? Like we said, that come from Black farmers and Black culinary traditions. She directed this film about all of this. It's called Rhythms of the Land.
These are our elders, kneeling there for us to stand on their shoulders. We honor them with this rhythm.
I interviewed 30 former sharecroppers, farmers, current farmers, a basket weaver, and they told me what it was like. There is a woman that's 109. My great aunt, Aunt Rose, was 99 at the time. And so they remember their grandparents who were in the Civil War. They had guineas. They raised geese, turkeys. They had sorghum, and all of these are African foods.
And Lila, Dr. Gail says it wasn't just about growing food to sell the food. It was about the actual act of sitting down and actually eating it.
These people talk so fondly of growing food and giving it away, feeding the community, taking care of the community. I think there is a reclaiming, and it has to be intentional and it has to be on purpose. We have to decolonize our mind when it comes to our food and our land and our relationship to community. And that's really the power behind that.
All of this talking about reclaiming our food got me really interested in how we could do that. So, Hannah, I went to the Black Food Summit, hosted by Chef Bryant Terry. He's an award-winning chef and author of this incredible anthology on Black food called Black Food. And so this event was spearheaded by the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. And it was a weekend dedicated to Black food and Black solidarity.
It's been a life mission of mine to highlight the contributions that Africans and people of African descent have made throughout time in history and around the globe. Because so often, as you know, these contributions have been erased or unrecognized. And so I'm always committed to that work of elevating and uplifting the contributions that my people have made.
So we gathered on a farm in Pescadero, about an hour south of San Francisco, a group of Black folks, all of us interested in the Black food movement, all traveled to a ranch called Tomcat Ranch.
You know, I really wanted to have Black folks talking about and writing about and meditating on our food and doing it in a way with very little concern for the, no concern, actually, for the white gaze.
And when we arrived, we were greeted with green smoothies and some of the sweetest, juiciest watermelon I had ever tasted.
Ooh.
Yes, girl, yes.
Lots of just really engaging and fun activities at the ranch, but then we'll be ending the day with a community supper.
And we ate together, we pet horses to de-stress, we did breath work. And there was this moment, Hannah, where we all laid down together in a room to rest.
Daydream. You can just be.
It was called the Nap Ministry.
You are enough. Rest your eyes. Rest your body.
The Nap Ministry, yes. I know that organization. It's based in Atlanta. It's led by Trisha Hersey. Mm-hmm. And she gathers Black people to just come together, close their eyes, and rest to nap.
Your body is a site of liberation. Open the site to rest.
Leela, I love this idea that you're just all laying down and disconnected and not thinking about all the things we have to do. You're just at peace.
Breathe in slow. Release.
I mean, not thinking about arguing about the validity of our Black-centered projects, the ways that we're fighting to be heard and understood. I mean, we were all just letting go of all of this and just resting.
You are enough. You've always been enough.
Yeah, that's definitely a powerful experience.
And at the end of the nap, Anna, I looked around the room, and all these Black people are just resting, surrounded by good food.
What does that feel like? What did you feel? Were you able to just relax and let go like that? Like, was it easy?
I was. I totally was. And, you know, the thing is, I think about, of course, on that plane earlier, I wasn't resting and I wasn't around people that looked like me at all. And I was very triggered. And so this space was creating a place of, like, disconnect. And, Hannah, we were surrounded by a lot of the foods that we were shamed for eating, you know, in our past.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I did?
I mean, I hope you ate some watermelon and went to ride a horse.
I didn't ride a horse.
Oh.
But I for sure did lean into the idea that sometimes you just gotta let your mind rest.
Eat your watermelon, girl.
Imagine a world filled with justice. Imagine your justice. What does it look like? What does it feel like?
You've been listening to the episode Watermelon from the Stoop podcast, hosted by me and Leela Day. You can find this episode and more at KELW.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Priscilla Na Ankra, Gabe Graben, James Rollins, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.